The next case this morning is number 052499, the United States against John B. Baker. Mr. Keith.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, my name is Tom Keith, and I'm an assistant United States attorney for the United States. And I'd like to start out this morning by saying that John Baker is a dangerous man beyond what is reflected in either his conviction or the sentence he received in this case for the distribution of child pornography, and here's why. Mr. Baker sent child pornography to what he thought was a 14-year-old boy. Mr. Baker told the 14-year-old boy that he had already had sex with two 13-year-old boys. He asked what he thought to be a 14-year-old boy to produce child pornography and to return it back to him. And he also used the internet to persuade of what he thought to be a 14-year-old boy to engage in sexual activity with him.
I'd like to ask something, Mr. Keith.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because after, reading everything, I'm wondering if you are suggesting that in reviewing a district court decision for imposing a sentence, that we are confined to reviewing the written statement of reasons? Because, let me tell you why I'm asking you that. When the government is up here defending some of the sentences that are two or three times the guidelines range, the government supports those arguments with the oral statements that the district court made during the sentence hearing.
Your Honor, I agree with that. I think that, and I think the statute's clear at Section 3553C, that if the judge, in sentencing the defendant, has a reason for doing what the judge does, he must state that in open court. And I think that it's reasonable for this court to consider that. If, in course, with 3553C3, if that judge goes outside the sentencing guidelines, it says at 3553C2, that they must state with specificity the reason on which they relied to go outside the guideline range. And I think there's a good reason for that. This court had said in Dean that the 3553A factors are open and, in the terms of this court, were hopelessly open-ended, vague and hopelessly open-ended. So I think it is when a judge departs outside the sentencing guidelines, he must state clearly and specifically the reason for which he's doing that. And the judge did that in this case.
But as going back to Judge Rovner's question, does it have to be in writing as opposed to a verbal statement?
Well, 3553C2 would suggest that there has to be the reason. I don't think it has to be articulated in any expanded form, but I think the reason has to be written, as it says in that statute, in the judgment and commitment order as to the reason. But I think that we have to go back to the record as a whole to see if that reason is justified within the record as a whole, Your Honor.
See, if I review the oral statements of the district court during sentencing, it looked to me as if he used the factors set out in 3553. He looked at the specific history and characteristics of the defendant, which you can see are unusual in a criminal defendant, and he adjusted accordingly. Why would that be enough to support a 20% drop in the sentence? In other words, we don't require much more than that when we support huge increases, 200, 300%. And it seems to me that the discretion goes both ways. And you may be jeopardizing some of the maddest sentences that you get in the more egregious child pornography cases. Like Johnson, decision in October. Although I hear you arguing that Mr. Baker, may be more dangerous than the judge may have thought.
Yes, Your Honor. Let me address that specifically. The judge said in some of his considerations of other factors. One of the main things the judge said was that there was no blemish in his character or background. I think that we have to go back, if we're going to consider that, into the record as a whole to see if that justification is supported. And in this case, I'd submit it is not. For instance, it takes a lot of time for someone to amass 300 to 600 images of child pornography. And these aren't just children posing. These are the most egregious, vile, heinous types of images that one could find. I've said it in my brief, bondage, things stuck in orifices of little kids' bodies that shouldn't be there. And he also, over a period of time, used the Internet to contact people, or children, what he thought to be 14-year-old, to elicit these things that I had already previously exposed to this court. And I would suggest that that is a blemish in his record. I'd submit that when he was talking to what he thought was a 14-year-old boy, that took place from May through August. I would submit that, too, based on his experience in grooming these children, based on what the record shows, this wasn't his first time. And when the court looked at such things as his voluntary activities, for example, into church activities, even the witnesses said that he made a career out of counseling 12 to 14-year-old kids. The record shows that he did, in fact, do that. But, Your Honor, these are the types of kids that he was sexually interested in. He was interested in this age group, as found by the court, and he admitted being interested in these age group. He was a school bus driver for junior high school age. He was studying to be a gym teacher for junior high school age children. These are not benign activities. And I would suggest that placing yourself and maintaining constant contact with children of the age you're sexually interested in makes him the worst parent's nightmare. And I suggest that it is a blemish on his character and his background. And once more, the judge did not find that he was a person of good character. That was never a finding of the district court in this case. And so if we go back and we look at the record in this case to see if it supports the judge's findings, I would suggest that it just doesn't withstand that. Having said that, when the judge puts in the written J&C, that it was because he had no evidence of any contact with children or no acting out against children, I would suggest that that was the most important thing upon which this judge relied in making the departure downward. And the judge did say himself that he was a danger to the community and that he was specifically dangerous to young children. My light's on. I'd like to conclude with this. Congress and the Sentencing Commission have made statements in these types of cases involving young children and how to protect them. With the PROTECT Act and other acts, they've increased the statutory penalties. The Sentencing Commission, in increasing the penalties under the sentencing guidelines, the recommendation, in taking away some of the bases on which to depart, are making a statement. And if the court, the district judge, has a darn good reason for going below the guidelines, then so be it, and that's fair. But I think he should have to articulate that reason in the J&C in order to justify that, because in order to give meaningful review, we have to know what that reason is based on the openness and the breadth of the 3553A factors. If I could reserve my time.
Thank you, Mr. Keith. We'll hear now from Mr. Brighton.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Carl Brining. I'm an assistant federal public defender with the Central District of Illinois, and I represent Mr. John Baker. The variance from the guideline in this case was less than 20%. What we're talking about here is approximately a two-level reduction, 21 months.
Let me ask you this. Let's take an example of some kind of a fraud scheme case where a defendant is convicted of defrauding a whole bunch of people, and the guidelines are then formulated, which are going to be advisory, but they're put together, and the judge finds that the victims were vulnerable, so it adds 3 points. Okay? Perfectly appropriate way to fashion the guidelines. But could the judge fashion the guideline range and a case where the victims were not vulnerable and say, but because the victims were not vulnerable here, I'm going to reduce the sentence?
In terms of the guideline, I don't think he can. But in terms of considering what sentence is sufficient but not greater than necessary, and considering the history and characteristics of the defendant, I think he can consider the whole defendant, the whole person, that person's otherwise law-abiding life.
But if the guidelines here in this this case, had Mr. Baker acted out and actually done something with some young or this young boy here, the guideline range would have been a lot higher than it turned out to be. Mm-hmm. But because he didn't do that, I wonder why does he get credit for the fact that the judge thought he didn't act out on it?
I think acting out might be a bad way of putting it. I think what the judge was trying to do in that case is focus upon what Mr. Baker's life was like before this and what his life might be like after this, and decide whether or not the guideline sentence was greater than necessary.
Now, you know, the sentencing guidelines have been amended to increase the minimum base sentence level on the new minimum for Mr. Baker. Would be 188 months.
I don't think so. I think the guidelines that he had at the time are the guidelines that should be considered. And I think now, with the guidelines not being mandatory, I think the 3553 factors are equally, if not greater, of greater importance than whatever the guideline range is.
In this case, he, you know, to give him some credit for not having acted out, he did say, as your opposing counsel reminded us, that he did have sexual encounters with two 13-year-olds. He did say that, and I know that somebody's talking about maybe that was puffing or whatever, but why couldn't that shouldn't that statement be taken just at face value?
Well, you look at the context of that statement, and you see that when Mr. Baker was arrested, he confessed to everything immediately. He was immediately cooperative with the police, and he remained cooperative through the entire process, pleading guilty. He has never made any excuses for the things that he did. I think when you look at it in that context, I think the important thing to draw from that is that Mr. Baker did not make any excuses, that Mr. Baker was honest. Now, why would he?
Well, he was given acceptance of responsibility here.
Well, yes, but...
And that lowered his guideline range.
Okay.
I mean, that's how it's taken care of there, isn't it?
I guess the point I'm trying to make is that we can't really have it both ways. Was Mr. Baker telling the truth about all of this to the police, but then saying, well, no, that didn't occur, and that was a lie? It seems that there can't be... The government can't have it both ways. I mean, either accept the fact that he is telling all that occurred, or do not accept that, but don't pick and choose. I think it's important that this sentence imposed by this judge came after a lengthy sentencing hearing, a sentencing hearing where the judge questioned the witnesses on his own. One witness was a PhD in counseling and psychotherapy with specific experience in this area. He questioned that witness longer than either the government or the defense counsel combined. 10.5 pages of the transcript are the judge specifically questioning those witnesses. This is a well-reasoned decision, and I believe that it should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brining. Mr. Keith, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honors, even under the November 2003 sentencing guidelines, the ones that Mr. Baker was sentenced under, if this was a real 14-year-old boy instead of an undercover officer, if that was the case, he would have received a 7 base offense level increase under 2D2.2B2D. That would have put his bottom of his base offense level at 235 months. If this was a real boy that he was trying to induce over the internet into engaging in sex, he would have received an additional 5 levels. But assuming he just receives 5 additional levels, that's 188 months at the bottom of the guideline range in this case. And defense counsel said there was only 2 levels difference. Despite all the aggravating factors that were not taken into consideration that I enumerated for this court in the sentencing guidelines themselves, the district judge made a finding that he did not, he'll give the defendant a benefit of the doubt, and he will not take it into consideration that he said he had sex with 2 13-year-olds. He said that was puffing in order to get the 14-year-old to do what he wanted him to do. Your Honors, that's acting out. If you're going to, even if it isn't true, that's acting out against children. And if we take away 2 offense levels, it's the same in this case as if he only possessed 10 images of child pornography, or if he didn't use the internet, or if these images were not of children under 12 years of age. So it's all in all of these bases, I submit that it was an unreasonable sentence in this case. Let me close with this. If we assume everything's the same in this case, except when it got to the written statement, if the court would have said this, that because you're a man, I am going to sentence you at a lower sentence, I submit that's unreasonable because it's an improper factor under 3553A. And I submit that sentencing someone lower based on the lack of an aggravating factor is unreasonable. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Keith. Our thanks to both you and to Mr. Brining for fine arguments, and the case will be taken under advisement.